podcast about Tom Waits, kind of. And now your hosts, Marios Kritiotis and Dave O'Brien.
Hey, and welcome to Rain Dogs, the podcast with an agenda. And that agenda is to either to get our producer, Patrick, to love the album Rain Dogs by Tom Waits, or to drive him insane. And I'm Dave, and with me on this journey is Mar. Hey, Mar.
Hey, hello, David. And just to be clear, my entire goal is to drive Patrick insane. I have absolutely no desire to make him care about this record whatsoever. Although my dad is now listening, and I do want my dad to like this album. So I guess inadvertently, I will try to make Patrick like it as well.
All right. Well, we've got two agendas now. Although I will say, if we do drive Patrick insane, he might appreciate the album more.
That's true. I mean, this is, although, you know, as we discussed in our last episode, which, by the way, is taking the airwaves by storm. Thanks to all of you, dear listeners, we have now reached the dozens of listens. So we have about as many Rain Dogs listeners as there are never nudes out there in the world. So
several of whom might not even be our family members in either case.
I checked it on Audacity and it only records the IP address once. So I know for a fact me constantly going back and overanalyzing every dumb sound I make when I'm like drinking or breathing. That was not all me. So 22 people listened to the just on the website. So wow, we're really reaching the masses. So cheers, everyone. Thank you for listening.
All right. Well, last time we covered four songs, right? Four amazing songs. Was it Singapore, Clap Hands, Cemetery Polka, and then Jockey Full of Bourbon, which I think is a favorite of both of ours.
Definitely so, ended on a high note last step.
Yeah. Well, and that's going to be the beautiful thing about this podcast is we're always going to end on high notes. Some notes are going to be weirder than others, but they're all going to be pretty high.
Indeed, they are. And some housekeeping from the previous episode. First and foremost, we were talking about if you lose your mind, you will be more fond of Tom Waits. When I was looking at the sequencing of this album, which we've talked about, which is seemingly intentional, but also gutsy and different in terms of the sequencing. It is funny how the quality of the four, you know, I was just assuming we would talk about three or four songs this ep, like we did last time, how much the quality just rockets as this album goes on. And so I'm super stoked. One quick note as well on the Jockey Full of Bourbon. I found two really interesting covers. We're going to do a Tom Waits covers app.
Obviously. But to make that premium content.
That'll be premium.
Subscribers only.
That'll be a Patreon only app. But Joe Bonamassa, the blues guitarist, does a very interesting arrangement of
really.
Jockey Full of Bourbon, and then Los Lobos, who I think are like such an underrated, like that band kicks so much ass.
They're amazing.
Dreamin' Blue. If you haven't, you know, in the warm weather, if you have not gone out on a deck somewhere, listened to Dreamin' Blue while drinking a macro brewed American style Pilsner, you're literally missing out. That's the move. That is the vibe of 2024. Is Dream and Blue by Los Lobos with a
warm.
Preferably like a Rolling Rock, which is my official dirtbag beer of 2024, a Miller High Life would be a perfect. That'd be a perfect Dream and Blue, but Los Lobos does a version, and the guitar, the Mark Ribot guitar is it's a horn section that does the like that part. It's pretty sick. 16 men on a dead man's chair. I've been drinking from a broken cup. Two bad fans from a mohair rip. A full of bourbon, can't stand up. Yeah, I'm burning fire away home.
ambitious.
Very much like in, very much in the same realm as the first.
Yeah.
So there you go. Those are the two things I just wanted to say before we get into this one. I'm not going to talk about Randy Newman today. I'm going to try so hard not to, although I think I brought him up already.
Yeah. I mean, I think Patrick and I talked about it, and we allocate at least like 3 to 4 Randy Newman digressions for you per episode. So you've still got a couple left if you need to.
I also had another listener tell me to stop drinking in the microphone. So I'm going to keep moving backwards. I'm only drinking tea today. I was drinking mezcal last episode. I don't know if anybody could tell. So we'll see. We'll see how I do completely sober.
Yeah.
So, let's begin. Let's just quickly rehash, you know, a few things. Number one, this is a podcast about not just Rain Dogs. This is, our mission is to provide, to be your spirit guides in a way of Tom Waits, of the discography of Tom Waits, the oeuvre, and just the overall, what we believe is the artistry behind this guy, why we think he's so important. So if you are a casual listener or someone who's very unfamiliar, give it a try. And if you know more than we do, please email us and tell us all the places that we were wrong.
Or keep it to yourself. You know what? Maybe that doesn't need to be out in the universe, right? Yeah, and you know what? It's not, Tom Waits isn't for everyone, but he might be for you. You might be a Rain Dog too. And that is our motto here at the Rain Dogs Podcast.
There you go. It's funny, I was cutting my grass today. This is the last tangent, I swear, and then we're going to talk about this album. But I was cutting my grass and it started raining, and I felt like a rain dog. Like it was very rain dog. There's nothing more depressing than cutting your, like, a lawn while it's raining, like the grass clipping sticking to you.
Oh, yeah.
You're all wet. So I felt like a rain dog. So there you go.
Yeah.
And that was, that was a dumb anecdote. I'm going to delete that.
No, it's a great anecdote. It's it's evocative. And if you are listening to this and you're wondering, what is a rain dog? I promise you, we will get to that, but not until the song Rain Dogs.
Yeah. Spoilers. Yeah, the next first song on the second side. So hang in there, strap in. And until then, we've got another absolute banger to start us off here. Tango Till They're Sore.
Track 5.
Well, you play that tarantella, all the hounds will start to roar. The boys all go to hell, and then the Cubans hit the floor. They drive along the pipeline, they tangle to their sore. They take apart their nightmares and they leave them by the door. Let me fall out of the window with confetti in my hair. Deal out jacks of bed on a blanket by the stairs. I tell you all my secrets, but I lie about my past, and send me off to bed forevermore.
So, what do we think about this one, Dave? I got a lot of thoughts on this one.
Yeah, good. Another great song. I want to say this is another sort of like growly, sort of like not whisper songs, but sort of like, you know, like gravelly voice, sort of barking at you kind of some songs, but that just describes most of the album, so I don't know if that's really a useful distinction here.
He's doing something different with his voice than all the other tracks. Definitely agreed.
Yeah. Like even more than usual. And it's, this one is also, we talked about some of the earlier songs about how they were almost sort of nursery rhyme-esque. Or like, you know, just like the meter and the rhyme scheme is poetic. And that's not to say that they are like immature or, you know, infantile or anything like that, but just sort of like the very basic, like, you know, the very simple structure of it. And I think this is another one. In classic Waits fashion, like, he opens up with some really powerful imagery or some interesting imagery. And like the first line is, well, you play that tarantella and all the hounds, they start to roar and the boys will go to hell. Then the Cubans hit the floor. And they drive along the pipeline. They tango till they're sore. they take apart their nightmares and they leave them by the door, which is like, again, if that was just a poem on its own that you had to read in like high school English class, that would like stick with you, I think.
Yeah, I think it's like, this is one, you know, it's funny, like I was thinking about where Tom Waits songs end up on playlists of mine. And, you know, this ends up being a song I put on a lot of Halloween playlists because of, and like music from New Orleans is always like, you know, it's a little bit, you know, it shares a lot of similarities with Greek music, just in terms of like how much of it is kind of like centered around death, but not necessarily in a sad way. It's like almost, you know, it's almost like a song that acknowledges that we all will die. One that's part of being a human being. But you know, this whole song is kind of a wish, you know, of what he wants kind of to happen to him when he dies. You know, he wants people to, you know, turn the spit on that pig. You know, he wants to have a hog roast. Get me to New Orleans. I love that second verse. Make sure they play my theme song.
Yeah.
I guess daisies will have to do. Just get me to New Orleans and paint shadows on the pews. Turn the spit on that pig, kick the drum and let me down. Put my clarinet beneath your bed till I get back in town. Which is like so New Orleans. You know, obviously Zora Neale Hurston and you know, all the zombie kind of Louisiana, you know, all of the Deep South has such a connection with voodoo and with zombies. And, you know, the horns in this song, it's such a New Orleans song. And
yeah.
I just love that he's dying. You know, the whole song is him dying and he's like his wishes for his funeral. And then he says, put my clarinet beneath your bed till I get back in town. So he's either coming back as a zombie or maybe it's like just the resurrection in general.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's talking about here. I don't know if he's a... What's the difference between like the Calvinists? I don't know if he believes in the resurrection of the body or not here. Tom Waits, we're not really sure where you are on that theology, but you know, I'm assuming he means like as a zombie.
Right. If this is New Orleans, one would hope. Although, you know, like what is like the sort of the consistent lyric that the one that the song goes out with is send me off to bed forevermore.
Oh man. Like, yeah.
He's just he's ready for the beyond. And that's a great point about like, this is a song about mortality and facing death, but it's very, and again, through the Tom Waits lens, very upbeat and positive in a lot of ways, right? Like, well, you play the Tarantella, which is the opening one. Tarantella is like that traditional Italian wedding dance that if you've seen The Godfather, like, you know, that's a happy dance for sure. Like, you know, everyone is having a big party for like the big, I assume New Orleans style funeral he's planning here.
I think it's so funny that the name of the song is Tango Till They're Sore, and then he mentions a tarantella. You know, it's like, what's happening here? What dance are they doing? But I'm wondering if, you know, and I don't know if this is anything, but like when he says, you play the tarantella, all the hounds will start to roar, the boys all go to hell, and the Cubans hit the floor. I'm wondering if he means like a cigar. Like, I'm wondering if it's like we're dancing and the cigars are hitting the ground or something.
I was wondering that same thing. Yeah. Hard to say, like that wouldn't surprise me, but he also just like loves to throw in references to various ethnicities in these songs. So
yeah, right. There is a lot of that. So yeah, I don't know. I just think this is such a cool, I love the line in the chorus. And again, I mean, this is another Tom Waits song that, you know, does have like a cadence of an actual song. You know, there's a chorus.
Yeah.
You know, there's a verse and a chorus that are very distinguishable. You know, so, and again, so, and this is track 5, and this is really the second one that's like an actual song, you know, in the cosmetic sense or in the, you know.
They're all songs.
But I love in the chorus when he says, I'll tell you all my secrets, but I lie about my past. You know, that's,
I love that.
To me,
I
like,
love that verse.
Yeah, to me, it's like, it reminds me, you know, you brought up Homer last time, so I get a free pass for Homer here. But I can't help but get a little Homeric based on my ethnicity. But I think I love this notion of like, I'm letting you in on something, but I also lie. I make things up. you know? And I just think that's a beautiful, the unreliable narrator is such a Tom Waits thing, just in general, you know, he's so, informed by some of that, you know, like James Salter, this great American author. He's like an underrated, guy. He's Hemingway-esque in terms of like, he wrote those really tight, really curt sentences. Like he didn't really like decorate his sentences with a lot of fluff. It was just like, he just wrote, he was a,
no use for commas.
Yeah. He was not a big fan of commas, but he wrote this great book called A Sport and a Pastime. The narrator is just such a creep, you know, and it's in first person, but it's clearly not him, obviously. And at the end of the book, he kind of almost says like, I might have made this all up. Like, I don't know. You know what I mean? And this is so cool, you know, and it's so New Orleans, you know, the trickster, you know, the kind of voodoo trickster walking around the swamp, you know, selling you secrets, but none of them are really real anyway. It's so great. I love the vibe of this song. The whole, like, it's got a, almost like a sepia tone to it, you know, like you can smell New Orleans in this song. And that's, to me, it's so cool.
Yeah, he does such a good job of creating an atmosphere in his songs, and they're all very distinct. And this is like a really specific, you know, atmosphere where it's like the horns, the music, and it's all kind of festive, but also like it's about death and dying, and also like, man, like, you know, we'll play, you know, you've heard the clip, but like, his voice on this one is just like Tom Waits kicked up to 11 almost.
Right.
Like just
pure gravel.
Well, you're playing. Yeah, I'm not even going to try to do it. It's just amazing. And again, like he has a pretty good voice. He's going out of like, it's just has such a range. You can make it sound like this.
Yeah. We've in just a few songs, we'll hear what he really can do. So the fact that he chose again, like I think he chooses the voices on purpose. Like I think they come to him.
Absolutely.
You know, as he's writing it. So it was a choice to do that voice for sure.
Yeah. And again, like you said it best, but like, I'll tell you all my secrets, but I lie about my past. Like there are some Tom Waits lines that just are, you know, are just seared into my brain. And that's one of the best ones. I love this idea of like, I will tell you anything about who I am, but nothing about who I was or where I came from kind of thing. And in a way, like this is a very forward looking song because he's thinking about his death and, you know, like looking ahead, like what I used to be doesn't matter. You know who I am now. And this is what I want, you know, when it's time to go to bed forevermore.
And that final verse, you know, where he says, write my name on the hood, send me off to another town. You know, I think is so beautiful, too, because it's like, it's kind of like his version of, you know, like me, I'm still on the road headed for another joint. Like he's just always he's dead and he still wants to, you know, just in case I come back, put my clarinet under my bed, you know, put me on, strap me to a car, drive me to a new city.
I mean, maybe that's what death is in the Tom Waits cosmology, right? He's just going on a big tour of, you know, like he's just, you know, he's just doing a show in another realm. He's not dead. He's just touring.
Yeah, he's just and I love the instrumentation here. I love the like he uses like this out of tune piano on here. It almost sounds like he hits the wrong note like right out of the gate, but I think it's just out of tune. And then the horns are just, you know, the New Orleans, like the second line horns in this song are just like perfection. I believe it's the first song that doesn't have a guitar in it at all. I don't think this is a song that Mark Ribot, it sounds like it's just piano and horns. So that's an interesting choice too. And again, this is an album about, you know, he recorded while he was searching for like the heart and soul of New York City, living in these basements, capturing the sounds of, you know, the city. And we're in the first third of the album, by a mile, and he's in New Orleans now doing a New Orleans song again. Like, you know, I just think that's, again, such an interesting sequencing choice. I'm glad it's at the top half of this album, because this is another one that I revisit so often. I think this is one of the best on the record. I just absolutely love listening to this song. And it's quick, 2 minutes, yeah. 51 seconds. You know, not one song that we've covered so far is over 4 minutes long, which I think, you know, Tom Waits can be very literary in a song. He can be very verbose in a song, but he's never dense and he never keeps you too long. Like, and that's, I really appreciate that about him, because sometimes some of these guys, you know, like, you know, you'll be on like a 17 minute Neil Young, you know, Cortez the Killer, which is one of the best songs ever made. But it's like, okay, Neil, land the plane, buddy. Like, it's time.
Oh, absolutely. And I like what you said about New York. And I was thinking about it some more earlier. And like, we have talked a lot about how this is an album about New York, but it rarely talks about New York. It talks about a lot of other places. But I think that's also like an important thing that he wants. Like, I think that's part of the texture of this sort of New York world he's getting into, right? Like, full of people from other places or like thinking about other places. Like, you know, he might be in New, like, for the song, he might be in New York thinking about the funeral he wants to have in New Orleans, kind of thing.
Yeah, like, for sure. Like, he's missing home. Yeah. I love
that. Yeah, so maybe, yeah, I mean, like, he's just sort of like setting the place, not by like doing a very literal, like, Simon and Garfunkel style, like dropping the names like of specific streets. Yeah, like albums. Like, maybe he's just sort of like, you know, creating the context and sort of like reference to other places, like, you know, other places. Or like how the people there are sort of like exist within the within the broader universe that New York lives in.
Which I do think, like, when you're an artist who, it's always an artist that anytime they do this, they're always kind of taking themselves a little too seriously. But when you sit down to compose a song with a city in mind, and you want it to be some sort of like homage to the city, it's never, to me, it's always pretty lame. Like, I mean, I love, everyone knows how much of a freak I am about Bruce Springsteen. Streets of Philadelphia is like one of my least favorite Bruce Springsteen songs. And I think Walking in Memphis, you know, from what's his name, Mark Cohn, is like one of the corniest songs, you know, ever made, ever.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark. Sorry, Mr. Cohn. But, I think like the best artists, you know, whether it's like Leonard Cohen doing Chelsea Hotel, Zevon doing Desperados Under the Eaves, which I think is one of the best songs about LA ever made.
Oh yeah.
They're not like sitting down like, I'm going to write, you know, I could see like Bono, and I love you too, but like, I could see Bono being like, I'm going to write a song about, you know, Athens, and this, it's going to capture the essence. It's like, dude, shut up, dude. Like, you're lame. You know, you're the minute you do that, you're off the roll call, you're now trying to do some sort of anthem where, like, you know, I'd rather it come about organically where they're capturing something where they don't necessarily need to be like Alicia Keys singing Empire State of, you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing.
Yeah. Amazing Bono impression, by the way. Like, your Irish accent is really coming along.
Yeah, you know, I'm just a guy from Cork. Is that somewhere in Ireland?
It is somewhere in Ireland, but Bono's from Dublin.
Of course. And again, no disrespect. I was just listening to The Unforgettable Fire. Love you too.
Great album. I will say so, but just, I think to sort of like help to like further the point you just made, what's one of the best Bruce Springsteen songs? And I know that's such a big list. Atlantic City, which is sort of a song about Atlantic City, but like the first verse is talking about another city where they blew up the Chicken Man in Philly last night. And then like, he's not in Atlantic City. Atlantic City is just sort of this idea of a place that like he has to go to do something terrible. But also like the hope of, you know, everything dies, and that's a fact. Maybe something that dies someday come back, which actually kind of fits in with what we were talking about.
100%.
Leave the clarinet under the bed for when I'm back in town. But yeah, like Atlantic City is maybe about Atlantic City, kind of, but it's also like doesn't really spend a lot of time talking about Atlantic City. It's about, you know, desperation and just hope and misplaced optimism and like trying to get away from something and change it, you know, and running out of options, which in many ways is probably a pretty good song about Atlantic City, if you put it that way. but again, you're not like name dropping streets or anything like that.
No. Yeah. It just never feels, like forced or anything. It's so funny that, man, you know, and like the cyclical nature of like life and death. I mean, like the best artists, you know, and really most religions, I think, focus on that. You know, there is this cyclical nature to life, and I can't help but think about, if you're bringing up Nebraska from Bruce Springsteen, or you're bringing up Atlantic City, which was on Nebraska, the last song on Nebraska is a song called Reason to Believe.
Take the baby to the river, Kyle William may call him. They wash the baby in the water, they take away little Kyle's sins. In a whitewashed shotgun shack, an old man passes away. They take his body to the graveyard, and over him they pray. Lord, now won't you tell us what does it mean? Still at the end of every hard-earned day, people find some reason to believe.
And it's all and it's all about these people who are down on their luck, who continue to fall into old habits, basically, while keeping the faith. And it's a dark song. It sounds like a happy song, but it's a very kind of disillusioned song. Bruce mentions that, you know, he was not feeling very good about organized religion at the time. Probably still doesn't, you know. I don't know. Springsteen on Broadway, he was pretty reflexive, I get, and pretty deep, went pretty deep, you know, in terms of spirituality. But you know, it's interesting that Reason to Believe is the final song on this album, and it's all about, you know, that again, that you know, dying and coming back. I mean, one of the verses is you know, they take the baby to the river and baptize him, and in a whitewashed shotgun shack, an old man dies, you know, and just an interesting correlation. I could talk about Bruce Springsteen for 7,000 hours. So
we got to save that for the next podcast.
We got him. We'll go ahead and move on. And do you have any final thoughts on Tango?
I mean, it's just a good song. I don't know what else to say. It's a lot of fun.
Banger. It's a banger.
Banger. It's a banger.
All right. So, you heard it here first. It's a Rain Dog certified banger.
All right. So then that's track 5. Track 6, Big Black Mariah. Black Mariah. What are your thoughts on this one? I'm curious.
So, you know, and we go back, you know, we can talk about, you know, in reference to the on your last pod where you said, on our last episode, when you mentioned how sometimes it's difficult, you know, to, it's like we couldn't sing along to Singapore, right? Because like there's some like racial things and some insensitive like jargon that is not, you know, holding up as well. And so when I saw the title to this, when I bought the record, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you hear the song, you know, it's just first off, it's another mood. In fact, it's such an interesting mood that he. So Keith Richards guests on guitar on this track. The guitar playing is Keith, and he they did take after take, and they couldn't figure out the name of the the vibe of this song. Keith just couldn't nail it, and they were getting frustrated. They're friends, and you know, Tom just kept coming in and saying like, "Dude, you're not doing it. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You just can't." So finally, you know, after like however many takes, Keith finally throws his hands up in the air and says, "Well, what the hell do you want? What do you want from me? Like, you got to tell me what to do here." And I guess Tom Waits did a weird walk in the studio. He was doing like this kind of funny strut. And Keith goes, "Oh, what the hell? Why didn't you tell me that, like, to start with?" And then immediately laid the track down, and it was the exact like mood that he was going for. This is like a strut song. Like, this is like, you know, I was like Big Black Mariah, like, uh-oh. Again, like, it's like kind of, uh-oh. What, you know, this is there like a racial thing here? I don't want to, but it's one of those, like, you mentioned the film noir aspects of some of these other songs. And, you know, there are a lot of interesting characters in this song, and they all, they either are associated with a color or like a weird kind of classic name. Like, there's a guy named Benny Jag Blue in this song. There's a character named Benny Jag Blue. There's a, it says, "Off to bed without his supper like the Linda Brides too." I don't know what that means. The Old Widow Jones, Fat Blue Johnny, Fat Blue Johnny.
Also Hunted Black Johnny. There's a couple Johnnies.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah.
I will say, so Big Black Mariah is like, I don't think it's like, there's not a consensus on necessarily what it means, but I think Black Mariah is usually like thought to mean either a hearse or like a paddy wagon, like, you know, an old police like van where they like, you know, throw people they'd arrested. And the fact that like it's, I'm not going to do the voice again, because this is also another one of those songs where like he kicks his voice into overdrive. Like, here comes the Big Black Mariah, here comes the Big Black Ford. So like,
oh man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so interesting. That to me makes so much more sense in terms of the song based on this noir thing that you mentioned, this noir theme that you continue to talk about in like Clap Hands, you know, those, you know, all of these all these stories now, you know, every verse, it has this story of someone. It's again, the colors, Red Bell Dame, Hunted Black Johnny, a Yellow Bullet. He's just a Benny Jag Blue. There's such an interesting grouping of colors in this song. To go back to the Big Black, you know, it's like all this life that's happening, and then here comes the hearse to get you after everything. And you know that the last verse, "Sent to the skies on a Benny Jag Blue, off to bed without his supper like the Linda Brides do. Now he's got to do the story with the Old Widow Jones. He's got a wooden coat. This boy is never coming home." You know, he's in the coffin, you know, the wooden coat.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Or I was that's not the last verse, is it? Yeah, it is. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, you know, he's all boxed up on a Red Bell Dame. Like, yeah, a lot of death references. You know, yeah, maybe this is another song, like, you know, thinking about death, which is a big theme here. I'm going to be honest, like, this is a good song, but, like, I don't think this is one that I return to a lot on this album. I think maybe like just where it is kind of goes against it. We've been talking about like sequencing a lot, and I think it makes sense where it is. But like the few songs that are ahead of it, and then the songs that are immediately after it are like, again, some of my favorites on the album. So this is something that I either just kind of like, you know, try to get through or skip over, or it's like I'm rarely like queuing up Big Black Mariah specifically when I like want to just like listen to one or two songs off this album.
I do. Yeah. The only time I really revisit this one is when I want to hear Keith's guitar just rip.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the chorus, like when it's well, he's all boxed up on a Red Bell Dame, Hunter Black Johnny with a blind man's cane. That's the one. I think they say that a couple times. Oh no, he uses it's different lyrics, but the pre-chorus, basically. It's like, because there's a verse and then like a little pre-chorus, and then that Here Comes the Big Black Mariah obviously is the chorus. But that pre-chorus, Keith rips this open chord, just the classic.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. Like, just that classic, wah, wah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it makes me happy to hear it. So you know, I'll listen to it. When I'm listening to it on vinyl, I'm not mad when it comes on. But, yeah, it's not one of my big – it's not one of the big ones for me.
But you're right, though. It's a strut song, right? Like, it's, you know, it's got attitude. It's cool. It's a fun song. It's just, I think it gets outshone by some of the things around it.
Well, and like, I love how it opens. I love the do-doom-do-doom. There's this cool beat. And then Waits is kind of like howling in the background. Like, he's not singing. Yeah. He's just going like, woo! Like, he just does this like weird little thing.
Yeah. There's something very visceral about all of it that I appreciate.
And I think this is the one I'm gonna look into this, because I'm not sure. I made a reference of this. I made a reference to this on our last pod, but no, it might not be this one. Hey, Ray Padgett. Oh, interesting. Ray Padgett writes about this in his Substack. Ray Padgett is a writer who writes an incredible newsletter about Bob Dylan's Never Ending Tour, and he interviews a lot of people. He just put out a book of interviews about Bob Dylan, and Ray Padgett has a newsletter called Every Tom Waits Song, where he writes about every Tom Waits song. So there you go. We are great guy. So shout out to Ray. I think I have like a couple of Twitter mutuals with him, so he'll be a listener within a month. So what up, Ray? One of these songs, this isn't the one, so I'm gonna hold my reference, so never mind. But it is, I love that anecdote, I love that story, I love to think about what that would be like in the studio with those two. I can only imagine what was consumed in that studio that fateful evening when they made this song.
Keith Richards and Tom Waits together in, was it 85 or when they're doing this album?
Yeah, and it wasn't like Keith that didn't have shit to do. I mean, like, that was when the Stones were kind of like doing like greatest hits tours and like kind of languishing, you know? So Keith was probably, I cannot imagine the state of mind he was in when they did this.
You know, maybe he was just hanging out and cutting albums with his friends.
Being rich. Yeah, I would.
Being rich. Wait, oh, that was the year before Dirty Work.
Yes. Not the great film as well.
Yeah. I mean, R.I.P. to Norm MacDonald.
R.I.P. Norm. Well, I guess that leads us to another very interesting song placed in a very interesting place on this record, Diamonds and Gold.
One, two, three, one, two, three, one.
Just talking about the use of colors, and we've got gold in the title now.
We've got gold in the title. Another song. It's interesting when you look at the sequencing, where you have this rollicking kind of sea shanty of Singapore, then this kind of like we talked about the scuzziness kind of Clap Hands, Cemetery Polka, almost you know, too flippant to even be a song, and also just a kind of a crazy song in general. You know, I was re-listening to it just because we had talked about it, and in between verses, the like weird accordion he played, like it's just such a chaotic song, Cemetery Polka. You get Jockey Full of Bourbon, kind of almost like with that sexy kind of Latin, you know, flavor to it. There's something there. And then you got Tango. Big Black Mariah is really a kind of a rock and roll. Like that's the first rock song. And so it's interesting that they get the tempo. They're going up and down, up and down, up and down. And then they, Big Black Mariah, you know, almost sounds like a single to me.
Yeah.
And then they bring in this song, which is like another vibey, just a vibey song.
Yeah. Like I can't really explain it, but a lot of this song kind of feels, this feels like some of the songs we talked about at like the very beginning. Like if this feels like it fits in, but like with Cemetery Polka and Clap Hands and that kind of, and like, and just that kind of thing, like the way the lyrics are, the way it's structured, just sort of the overall feel of it. And thinking back to what I said about Big Black Mariah, how maybe outshone by the songs around it, maybe isn't the right word. I think, because you're right, like there's the build up to Big Black Mariah, and then it kind of feels like the, not the bottom drops out, but like it drops again. So like we're back to the beginning of the album, which is with this, where it's like, you know, I don't want to say like enigmatic lyrics, because again, that's the, that's every song on this album. But like, you know, we've got references to being mad as a hatter in here. We've got like, you know, talking about like small time Napoleon shattered his knees. It's like it's telling like a story, like you're getting like snippets of a story here. But it's not in in classic fashion for Rain Dogs, but it's not like you're getting how would you describe the music on this one? Just like the lyrical back, like the not the lyrics, but like the actual like musical backing, because this is an interesting combination, I think, more so than almost any of the other songs we've had so far.
Yeah, there's like, it's a minor key, you know.
Yeah.
It's another one where like the percussion, you know, that marimba's back. You know, the marimba from Clap Hands is back. It's not doing as much as Clap Hands in terms of like like working with the melody, but it's not doing nothing, you know, it's in there.
Yeah, because his voice has that, again, it's kind of a growl there, but it's like, you know, he's singing on this, he's kind of singing. Someone will do it for diamonds, someone will do it for, like, was it, what someone will do here for diamonds, what some men will do here for gold. But it's like a very, he's not howling like he was on Big Black Mariah yet, right? Like, you know, he's not quite chanting like he is on some of the other tracks.
Yeah, it's like such an interesting, like, he does like this vibe, and this is what, you know, is this a waltz rhythm? I think it might, because it's like one, two, three, he starts it, one, two, three, one, two, boom, you know, and like, I don't know if that qualifies as a waltz, but like it's almost like a carnival song, you know, the way he starts.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's like this kind of twisted carnival, but then just the first two lines, like sets, he's so good at just making, he's like, you know, some people listen to music, you know, this is a minor diversion, but like most music fans listen to music to feel catharsis, you know, like people who listen to the big bands, you know, like even like recently, like I was listening to you know, Oso Oso, which is this great kind of emo pop band, and there's a song on his last not his last album, the couple of them before, Basking in the Globe, there's a song called Dig, I think it's called Dig, but he it right at the end of it, there is this monstrosity of a chorus. Yeah, it's called Dig. But there's this chorus that is like, it's just pure catharsis is the only way to put it. And like, some people are into music for that. They want to feel Taylor Swift, you know, like these people, they want to feel, you know, their problems kind of going away in, you know, big juicy hooks, you know, and big, and like, you're just never going to get that from Tom Waits. You know, there's no catharsis.
Yeah. All he does is sort of like build up the tension and you just don't get any release. I think of all the songs we've talked about so far, maybe of all the songs on the album, this one has always been the hardest for me to kind of like wrap my head around or like sort of like get an angle on, because there are parts of it that are really similar to the rest of the album. And I can't really point to anything that's saying like how this is like different or more mysterious than anything else. But there's just, you know, like the way that some of the music is, like the lyrics and just like his voice, it's always just seemed a little bit stranger and more enigmatic and also like wistful in a way. Or maybe he's just sort of like, maybe he's not pressing glass. So there's clearly like some sort of like, it's you know, there's definitely like a people just ain't no good type theme to this
definitely.
Kind of thing.
Cause
I mean, like,
well, and he's dying again. Like, he's like, what, you know, and I started to say this before I said the thing about, before I got distracted by emo, but, the first, other than the 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and then that beat hits and then the melody begins, his first lines and the, you know, it's seconds into the song. Yeah. Broken glass and rusty nails where the wild violets grow, say goodbye to the railroad and the mad dogs of summer and everything that I know.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like, and the way he draws that broken glass and rusty nails, like when I listen to this song, I honestly feel like shit. Like I really feel like I just don't feel good. Matt, you know, then that second, when you mentioned the Matt is a hatter. There's a hole in the ladder, a fence we can climb. Mad as a hatter, you're thin as a dime. Go out to the meadow. The hills are a green. Sing me a rainbow. Mm-hmm. Steal me a dream.
Yeah.
And I like, mean, but you know, you're thin as a dime. You know, like he's like, you're malnourished. Like he's just constantly, it's such a mood. Like it just makes me like, you enter this song feeling like absolute dog shit. And, and it's not a happy, you know, the chorus, like what some men will do here for diamonds, what some men will do here for gold. They're wounded, but they just keep on climbing and they sleep by the side of the road. You know, that could mean like the hustle in like a corporate, you know, this one might be the first like real New York, you know, allegory too, where it's like, you know, like go to Manhattan and see how many people are sleeping on the sidewalk that didn't make it. You know, like you come, you know, and we're trying, you know, people come here to get famous or they come here to get rich. They're broken people from all over the place and they keep trying to climb that ladder and they're failing, you know, every day somebody fails, you know, in that city. That city will eat you alive. I've only visited New York and I've never stayed there for more than 4 days at a time for work. And I always like, you know, some people like ride the subway and they like go to Brooklyn and they're like, I could live here. Every time I go to New York, I'm like, this city would eat me alive. It would consume me. There wouldn't be a piece of me left after a month of living in New York City.
I always feel that and also like combination of the I could live here thing. But like the first time I really spent time in New York when I was, you know, pretty young with my family, I just remember like walking by the street and seeing this like family with young kids, like basically busking for money. I was, you know, maybe like 13 or something where I could tell like, oh man, they are in bad shape. They're like, they're not doing this for fun kind of thing. It's kind of chilly out here. And that stuck with me like, oh man, this place can eat you alive.
Yeah, dude. It really can. And
And I don't like, there's a way to like see the song and see it sort of like, you know, if not, maybe not inspiring, but like a testimony to just like the human spirit or whatever, you know, like there's a hole in the ladder, a fence we can climb, right? Like, you know, there's a way up, there's a way in or a way out, depending on how you want to see it. And then, like, you know, go out to the meadow, the hills are green, sing me a rainbow, steal me a dream. Is that, like, is that, like, the goal you're reaching for? Is that a better world? Is that just getting out? Going home? Or is that just, like, you know, it's miserable over here. Just tell me that something's better somewhere kind of thing. Is this just a message of despair? Either way, great imagery all the way through. Man, well... On that happy note.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a terrible place to end a podcast where this small-time Napoleon shatters his knees, but he stays in the saddle for Rose. Another line, by the way, of just another deftly delivered line where it's like a little bit of a Western and where like, but I everyone knows a small-time Napoleon, you know, in their business or, you know, I was in a meeting recently and I had, this dude said to someone else, he said, "You aren't even major league. You guys are like AAA." That's what he said in the meeting. Like he was mad. And damn. I was like, damn, that's like a beautiful insult. And like that to me is this right here. Like you're Napoleon. Like, congrats. You're the Napoleon of your small, like little thing, you know, your little tiny world. You're the dictator of, you know, that's as far as you're ever going to get. And by the way, your knees are shot, but you're staying in your saddle for to impress a woman. So,
yeah.
Great song. Yeah. Great song, but, you know, not a, it is one I listen to often, but it's not one that makes me feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something unsettling about this song.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that that's just a little more unsettling than even his songs that are explicitly about death are. Like,
yep.
Cemetery Polka is like, like, that doesn't sort of like leave me as unsettled as this does. Cemetery Polka is like an upper compared to this song.
Totally, dude. Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think we can call it for this one.
We promised to make these when I put the first one out, I said we're going to be tighter. So I think that is a perfect place to stop. You know, we will continue this discussion in our next episode of what I think is a dynamite conclusion to side one.
Oh yeah, we're almost done. We got two more left in side one, and they are two of
triumphs.
I mean, I think the two of the strongest, definitely two favorites for sure.
So we're going to need all the time. We're going to need a lot of time for those ones. So I think this is the perfect ending.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Dave.
I'm Mar.
And we're the Rain Dogs.
For I am a rain dog too.
Thank you for listening. This has been a WTF production. See you next time.